Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington. Someday, the state of liberty. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith. Bringing you the story behind the story, and the news behind the news. And it's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but being in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ and raised us up with him and seated us with him in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Wow. That should be encouraging to all of us all the time. It should never get old. And all the little depressions and little setbacks and all those things, all that stuff, if you're in Christ and Christ is in you, under the feet of our Lord and Savior. So it's under our feet. And that's a simple idea. But boy, is it hard to have that true trust in your heart on it. Now, I want to talk today a little bit about everything happening in the world. But specifically, I want to talk about grounding. And I want to talk about confronting evil. Now, I have heard quite a bit over the last, two decades about it being wrong to be angry. You should never be angry. But that's not the way that I read Scripture. There is righteous anger. Somebody breaks into your house, tries to hurt your wife, tries to hurt your children. You fight back. There is righteous anger. And the problem today, I think, and seeing things in many different Christian circles, is that men have not been taught about righteous anger. And in addition to that, you have this attempt to emasculate men in America. The idea that kids on the playground can't wrestle and get rough with each other, and that pent-up energy and the pent-up aggression then gets released in ways that are horrific. And especially if there's bullying. That we need to relook this emasculation of the American male. And we need to relook this idea that anger is always bad. Now, if Jesus Christ is our model, he did get angry. And I have heard Christians try to water that down, give a milquetoast response when I bring that up. This wimpy Jesus gospel, it doesn't resonate with me because it takes a lot of courage to endure the suffering he endured. And B, he's coming back in glory to judge the living and the dead. And it's very clear. He's coming back as a warrior. Now, when we try to put our own internal conflicts onto our theology, onto our values and beliefs, and we end up with something that is not accurate, and we end up in a place where we're at today. The many confrontations that should have happened over the last 40 years as society continued to degrade, and we continued to watch God taken out of schools. We continued to watch persecution of Christians in this country. We continued to watch right after right after right trampled by a radical leftist agenda. But it's not the job of the church to confront that stuff. It's not the job of the church to say that's wrong. It's not the job of the church. And this is key, to judge certain behaviors as wrong. It's not the job of the church to be righteously angry. We're just going to keep preaching the gospel. Part of preaching the gospel, part of living as a Christian, is righteous anger. And I've got to tell you something. When I and I hope I get flooded with emails. I really do. Because then I'll be happy that everybody's awake and listening. The fact of the matter is, the church staying in its four walls and not confronting evil in our culture, evil in our politics, evil in our businesses, evil in our families, and evil in ourselves has resulted in a decadent culture that has degraded to the point where things that 10 years ago were clearly wrong and clearly seen as wrong in the public eye are not anymore. And if that's the case, we gotta reevaluate where we're at and what we're doing. Because one of the greatest studies that came out of World War II was a report done by the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, precursor to the CIA, and they studied Germany, and how it was possible in an ostensibly Christian country that such a horrific evil could occur. And they came to this conclusion, that the German government successfully kept the Christian church beyond the four walls of its churches. Kept it pacified and quiet, for the most part. Now, there was the confessing church, which was an attempt to stand up and confront the evil that was happening. And I want to say a word specifically to the men out there today. And not just my generation, but the millennial generation. Sometimes righteous anger is what is required, and it's okay. In fact, in many instances, it is our duty to confront evil where we see it. Now, the manner in which we do that, and that's a different discussion. But being righteously angry is okay. And I have to believe that if there would be more righteous anger out there, there would be a lot of things that we just take for granted now. We don't even put up a fight anymore that we would be fighting on every day. And I want to talk about something in particular, too, later in the show, and it's privacy. I don't even think we understand what we've lost. We don't even know really what freedom looks like anymore. And the reason we don't is because we're not practicing to hold the line. We're not standing up. We're letting things go because it's easier not to say anything. It's easier not to do anything. And the logical conclusion of that is that the forces of evil will continue on their march and their agenda if they're left unchecked. That's what they do. And I hear, I'm in a lot of meetings with a big cross-section of society. And people blaming government, bureaucrats, and look, bureaucrats are at fault in a lot of cases. It's true, okay? I got it. But ultimately, the fact that they have allowed to be that emboldened and that aggressive and that leftist and Marxist is because we allowed it to happen. We haven't been righteously angry. This is our country. It was paid for by blood. Our country, the greatest sender of missionaries, money, spreading of the gospel of Jesus Christ the making of disciples, the showing of tangible love to our neighbors, the greatest example in history, was only allowed to be that way because of righteous anger at the beginning that defended freedom so that those things could happen. Righteous anger at the English who said, you can't bear arms. You're a bunch of Bible-thumping backwoods hillbillies. I know they didn't have the word hillbilly back then, probably, but whatever. You get the idea. And then we said, no, this is our land. This is our country. These are our families. These are our businesses. And it's our freedom, and you cannot have it. We will not allow you to trample on our unalienable rights. And that's something that's absolutely critical to understand. We do not get these rights from government. We do not get them from a man. We get them from God. And the only way that we can give them up is either through death, when we don't need them anymore, or because we allow them to be given up. And people have asked me, Matt, what do you believe in compromise? And many of you have heard me on the show before say that I believe that leadership is not the ability to compromise. It's the ability not to. It's the ability to bring people over to your point of view and to find those areas where you do agree with somebody and you're not compromising a principle. And you can work on those two issues out of 100 with that person. But what I'm seeing today and what is frightening is in the Republican Party, in the business community, in society as a whole, in our churches, people are compromising with individuals who practice evil, who lie, who cheat, who steal, who hurt people intentionally, who smear people in the media. And these people are compromising with them and saying, no, we can form. No, you cannot. They've made their choice. And we need to be righteously angry. And we need to push back and say enough is enough. I'm not going to let you have my guns today. I'm not going to let you have my property today. I am not going to compromise with that person who is a scoundrel, who lies and cheats and steals, and then gets caught and tries to blame it on everybody else. I'm not going to compromise with those people anymore. I'm not going to do business with those people anymore. We're going to hold them accountable in our churches. And if it's in our family, we're going to take care of it in our family. We're going to hold them accountable. We need to get back to what it means. And for this is for all you guys out there, what it means to be men again. And for all of us as Christians, what it means to be true, righteous Christians with righteous indignation. Now, we don't get our righteousness from ourselves. We get it through Jesus Christ. We have got to allow it to flow through us, and we cannot keep saying we're just going to let it go. We're not going to say anything. We're not going to do anything because it's easier not to. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. And looks like we're going to be probably another, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes before we get our guest on. So I guess I'm going to go into the briefing now, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. In the Middle East, talked about Turkey taking Afrin. Looks like they're not moving any further into Syria. Looks like that flashpoint is down a little bit right now. You had 23 rabbis who came out. This was from Debka File and also a couple other sources. But these rabbis in the new reconstituted Sanhedrin have drafted a letter demanding for the creation of the third temple. It's time, they say, and that they need the help of Muslims to make it happen. Fascinating read, if nothing else. But I mean, these are things that, you know, 5 years ago people said, oh, that's just in a novel. It's in a book. It's never going to happen. Wow. And we're seeing it right now. All right, also on the international front, it looks like, and this is coming from, again, from Debka File, looks like the IDF is initiating action in Gaza, or at least taking the offensive posture in Gaza, because of escalating border provocations down there. So there's another flashpoint there. And, you know, when you start seeing this, it looks like they may be looking at pushing into Gaza. Apparently, on Friday, there was a mass Palestinian assault on the Gaza-Israeli border that was successfully pushed back by the IDF. And now the IDF is looking at going on the offense. All right, in addition to that, and this is very interesting. Now, we've been talking about this for a while, but also coming from Debcafile, the Saudi crown prince, quote, "The Jewish people have a right to their own land," end quote. Whoa! He's recognizing the right of the Jewish people to exist in Israel. That's amazing. He also said, quote, "I believe the Iranian supreme leader makes Hitler look good," end quote. So a fairly dramatic shift, obviously coming in the Saudi royal family. It's amazing to even talk about it. All right, China. Now, China is ramping up its retaliations. Now, everybody's kind of thinking that this is going to lead to some negotiation. But China is ramping up its space warfare program, and not just space warfare, but also weaponizing capital and big data and collecting big data. Now, I was watching a briefing on some of the stuff that China's doing, and they're literally trying to figure out how to track every single one of their hundreds and hundreds of millions of citizens using facial recognition. And apparently they've gotten it to the point where they can intercept somebody they want in 7 minutes in a city, obviously, where there's enough of the cameras. That's getting a little, not a little, that is Orwellian, okay? That is Orwellian. And another complete example of communism in its final form. And where does it end up? It ends up with total control over every aspect of your life. And we got to be careful, and I'm going to talk about this here in a second, in our own country, that we don't head down that road. All right. Let's next talk about Russia. Now, they closed, I still have not figured out, and if somebody has the answer to this, let me know. Still haven't figured out what this closing the consulate in Seattle was, you know, why they chose Seattle. But the largest expulsion of intelligence officers in history. Russia retaliated as well, in kind, with the same number, out of Russia. Now, as you heard last week, we had General Vallely on. General Vallely said that eventually, that there was a lot of hype out there. Eventually, it should just end up in Putin and Trump sitting down. Well, he was very prescient. He helped set up the first meeting, okay? But it looks like that Donald Trump said Monday that a meeting with President Putin is possible in the not-too-distant future at a number of venues, including the White House, and that the Kremlin responded is still open to a meeting. So Debcafile had this as well, that indeed preparations for a summit between Putin and Trump may indeed be in the offing. So that just goes to show you on Patriot Radio, you're getting dead accurate information and way, way ahead of time. All right, on top of that, on the national front, this coming, and if you haven't ever heard of Sarah Carter, you should check out her website. Phenomenal investigative reporter. Has an article up today, bombshell secret texts show FBI and Department of Justice may have rushed anti-Trump FISA warrant. Obviously, raising the specter that this was indeed a political warrant, which is fairly frightening that we would even be talking about that. But Sarah Carter has this up on her site. Check it out. And more evidence, text messages, emails coming out on this. And I suspect this is the tip of the iceberg. And we're already kind of getting a pretty good picture of what happened, that the intelligence briefing for the president was used essentially as a political weapon. And if that's the case, they're not just investigations. Somebody's got to go to jail. There has to be an example set. Otherwise, you know, this could happen into the future. And it doesn't matter who's in office. It needs to be cleared up now. And that brings me really kind of, this is a really important subject. It's about privacy. It's about privacy that we have left. And I posted this up on my Facebook page, also on the Patriot Radio Facebook page, from the Corbett Report. Five privacies we didn't know we lost. First, the privacy of garbage. In other words, that our trash can be searched through. Now, in Washington State, we have some pretty good privacy protections for our garbage, even when it's out on the curb, okay? But nationally, that is not the case. So if you have a federal agent, they can come down and search your garbage, whereas in a state officer cannot. In addition to that, the loss of privacy of location, that our smartphones are tracking us even when the location services, the GPS, is turned off. Now, I've talked about this for years, and people were poo-pooing it. They call these people normies. In other words, we want everything to be normal. We don't want to know about any of that stuff. Talked about the fact they could turn your microphone on. Talked about the fact that they can go through your data on your smartphone. Look, they can. It's here. It's real. This is a great briefing from the Corbett Report on all of these different things. And the interesting part about it is this technology is a couple of years old, and in some cases is a decade old. And so your location being tracked, and what they do is they create a web of who you talk to, when you talk to them, where you go, when you go, and they could create a pretty significant profile. And this is what I talked about on the show before. They take that profile, and then they do what's called activity-based intelligence. They create the dossier on all your activities. Then they introduce stimulus to get you to behave in a certain way. This is technocracy. We're going to talk a little bit about technocracy and technocrats today, too, with our guest. Then you have privacy of your transactions. All of your financial transactions, you're using a credit card all the time, those transactions are tracked. Facial recognition. On top of that, you walk into Walmart, you're on facial recognition. Then you have privacy of your DNA, which in many cases, massive databases are being built of your DNA for third parties, and the third parties claim they own your DNA. So check out the Corbett Report, phenomenal summary of where we're at and why I have taken such a hard stand on privacy in the legislature. And a couple movies, if you want to watch them, Surrogates with Bruce Willis and Gattaca. Watch those, because that's where we're at in a lot of respects. It's amazing. And if we don't start taking privacy seriously, and you're one of those people that says, I've got nothing to hide, that's not what it's about. You don't understand what's happening. Because if you cannot be secure in your private effects, you truly can't have freedom. That's the point. And it doesn't matter about you. It's not about you. It's about freedom in the society and the countries in general and as a whole. One of the other interesting things they talk about is freedom of thought, freedom of conscience. But, you know, freedom of thought, privacy of thought, they've tested essentially mind-reading technology. And they list it all here and all the different studies that are out there. And, I mean, again, activity-based intelligence, where does this end? This is pretty nasty stuff. And we need to pay attention now. All right, on top of that, Jim Rickard's coming out saying the International Monetary Fund is planning on launching a digital cryptocurrency part of the SDR, Strategic Drawing Rights, which essentially would be a world currency. It's a basket of currencies. Launched sometime late April, May, maybe a little later, and that's going to have a dramatic effect on the U.S. economy. Well, obviously it is, because then the petrodollar is not needed to settle accounts worldwide anymore. In addition to that, you have calls coming to seize your guns. And again, people said that'll never happen. Only it is. That's exactly what's happening. Former Justice Stevens of the United States Supreme Court saying the Second Amendment needs to be abolished. North Carolina sheriff candidate saying essentially he would pry it from your cold, dead hands. Democrat Georgia lawmaker Erica Thomas saying that it's not about confiscating firearms, it's about seizing them. And then Larry King with his ridiculous comment saying that the Second Amendment was put in place to suppress slave revolts. Clearly and demonstrably untrue. In fact, it was the exact opposite. It was to protect people who were fleeing persecution, protect slaves after the Civil War. And when they had been freed, one of the first things some Southern senators talked about was making sure they were disarmed. Unbelievable. So he doesn't know his history, but the fact of the matter is we are talking about now they want to actually seize your firearms. On top of that, on the national front, this caravan in Central America coming toward the U.S. border, Trump saying he's going to be sending troops to the U.S. border with Mexico. So the caravan meets U.S. troops. I don't know how this is going to play out, but we're going to keep our eye on it. On the regional front, talked about this ISIS-inspired teen who brought a bomb to school in Utah, and still not anything really from the mainstream media on this. Local media, yeah, there's a couple articles, but nothing from the mainstream media. Also on the regional front, still trying to track down this new Larry Wooten email, Special Agent Larry Wooten, the whistleblower in the Bundy case, has also sent in another email, and this one apparently implicating some more impropriety, not just in the BLM, but maybe even in the DOJ. So we're trying to get a hold of this email. A judge has put a protective order on it temporarily, so we're going to see how this plays out. Also on the regional front, the 51st State Movement had a great rally up there in Newport, Washington over the weekend. A lot of great folks showed up. Just a ton of people signing up and taking flags home and everything. We're going to come out with a new thing, okay? You guys are going to love this, okay? We just ordered them. You're going to love this. So your little sticky note you have over your computer camera, and listen, if you're listening to this broadcast and you do not have anything over your camera on your laptop or your home computer, just stop everything right now, turn the radio off, and go put it on your computer camera, okay? Because that's how you protect your privacy. And oh, by the way, they try to turn on, just like Facebook was outed, they turn on the microphones in your computer sometimes to listen to your conversations. They finally admitted that was true. We've been talking about it on this show for years. But here's the deal, okay? We have this new thing that we found, and it is a little slide for your camera on your computer, so you don't have to worry about the sticky note falling off all the time. And it says Liberty on it. Liberty State. It's beautiful. So we're getting those ordered right now. Stand by. I know a lot of you will want them. They're very, very inexpensive. But you can put them on your computers. You get to be reminded of Liberty, and it works with laptops. Laptops still close, and you can slide it in and out. You don't have to worry about it falling off. It's cool stuff. All right, on the local front, Red Pill Expo coming up on June 21st through 23rd here in Spokane. And you can either join live streaming or you can actually show up. And also on the local front, and save the date for this, we're going to do a march for our rights, our right to bear arms in particular, on April 21st. It's going to be here in Spokane. We're still trying to get a venue for this. So mark off April 21st. It's going to start at 12 noon. We're finalizing the venue details, and I'll let you know next week when I have them. And that is indeed the briefing. Well, thank you to everybody that's been praying for us and praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. Thank you also to everybody that has been weighing in with comments and things. It's just been wonderful to see how many people are enlightened and getting involved. Just encouraging. Keep it up. And you can also go to VoteShea.com and help keep us on the air. Well, it's my pleasure once again to join one of my favorite people in the entire country, Tom DeWeese, the American Policy Center, true freedom fighter. Tom, thanks for being on the show again.
Matt, it's great to be with you. You are fired up. I'm glad to be with you.
I am fired up. You know, we had a horrific session in Washington. Idaho did very well. We did not. So, how are you doing?
Doing well. We're my new book is out, and now we're working to put together this property rights network. And you know, the purpose of that, I get calls every day from people saying help, help, help. You know, all these things happening, and I haven't been able to do that. And so, putting this network together of activists across the country, where one of the biggest weaknesses we have is a legal end of things. I mean, so many things need a lawsuit, and we just haven't had that. I'm starting to get a few attorneys who focus on property rights and know what to do about it, and so getting that, I'm excited about that, and I'm excited that I'm getting other legislators like yourself and city councilmen and so forth to be a part of this, so we can network and share ideas and you know, do something, and instead of just saying, "Golly, we ought to." And that's the point of it all.
Well, so how do you see this property rights network kind of forming up, and how do you see it being structured?
Well, first of all, it's not an organization. It is nothing but networking. And we're going to put a website together, that has you know, every state listed. I'm reaching out now to people in other states that are doing things. They have stories to tell. Here is what we did. This was successful. Don't ever do this. You'll get your head handed to you. We want to be able to list people can contact, so that if they have trouble, they've got some people they can talk to, and certain legislators and elected officials that you know, they can talk to, so that we can share these ideas. We're going to start doing some training webinars like we did a few years ago, and bring some of the best experts in the country on different things and bring them on. And we'll probably have some conference calls where we can, you know, of people who are part of it, that we can talk about what needs to be done. One of the examples that I'm using as I'm saying to people really is coming from you, because you are my hero in this. And what you have accomplished in Washington, I know you're not happy about what happened this year, but you've done an amazing job. And what I hear all over the country is, well, we've only got two or three legislators that understand this, and we'll never get anything passed. And I came up with this idea. You tell me if you think this will work. If we had three legislators in a state that were all good folks and they wanted to do something, and we were able to help them network, let's say, just for numbers sources, in 10 different states, there were three like-minded legislators. What if they were able to network and talk, come up with some specific legislation that was really needed, property rights protection, whatever the case may be, and on the same exact day, at exactly the same time, in all 10 states, those three legislators dropped that bill into the hopper and held a news conference, and we had activists already ready to go to support that legislation. What if that happened and we were, you know, we held a news conference, you know, made a lot of noise about it? What if we got it passed in just three states? Would that make a difference and start something moving in the right direction?
Absolutely. The left would be petrified. Absolutely petrified.
Well, that's my plan.
So you're good at that too.
I like petrifying them, and no. But I just think the point of it is that we have a minority of people everywhere. Our people are up against it. There are so many great activists, but a lot of them are working by themselves, and they just get overwhelmed. But if we put this network together where they're no longer alone, that we can take our minority of people and put them together into a fighting force, basically taking Sam Adams' attitude, you know, we only need 10%. And we can really begin to turn things around. But that could be 10% of the legislature, it could be 10% of a community, city council, whatever, and we could begin to turn things around.
There's no question that it can happen. It's just a matter of will. How do we get involved? You know, are we going to be organized at the local level? Are we going to be focused on the task at hand? Are we going to eschew any infighting? And really, really go after who is trying to rob us of the ability to pass on wealth to the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, it is just incredible what is going on, and the use of eminent domain is on the rise since the Kelo decision back in, 2006, I think it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, these communities are just out of control. The major grants coming from HUD and EPA and other agencies that have these strings attached, and a community may think that they're just, you know, we're going to repair the street down Main Street or something, and then they find out, oh no, you've got to completely change. You got to put rotaries in. You got to put bike paths in. You got to put this in, and you know, all this stuff that completely changes their downtown, changes the form of their city. And there's all kind of grants to do a whole lot of other things, as you well know. And so, you know, we've got to educate them. And I'll tell you what's exciting about it to me at this point. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I am starting to get more phone calls from elected officials and some other folks who should have been on the front lines of this for a long time ago who are now saying, what do I do? I have been contacted by an attorney in California who is working with property rights people there. They've got landlord associations that are finally starting to get it. They're going to be out of business before long. HUD regulations are making it so that they aren't allowed to ask if people wanting to rent their property can afford it. Then they find out that they can't, and they can't get the money for the property. They're going to go out of business. They're starting to learn this. I am, it looks like, going to get an opportunity to address a state association of landlords in California sometime this year. So, you know, that's a big deal. That's the beginning of a whole new front that we haven't had anybody fighting on before. So this is the kind of thing that's starting to happen, that people are beginning to get it and asking, what do we do? It's why I want to put this network together. It's why I wrote the book. The book is a tool so that it can help educate, and it also talks about what to do about all these things. So, you know, all these tools are starting to come together. It's going to take me a while. I'm beginning to realize what a big job it is to put this network together, but I'm meeting some fantastic people who want to help, and we're starting to move forward.
Yeah, and you're going to meet some really fantastic people at Red Pill. You're going to be here in Spokane.
I am. I'm looking forward to that. And actually, I'm going to use my talk there. I'll give you a scoop here. My talk is going to be the official announcement of the network. I want to have everything in place then, and to go into detail what it's about and what we're going to do with it.
I'm super excited about that, and I hope everybody out there in Patriot Radio Land is as well, because this has been something that's taken years to get to a point where you can make this happen, and I just appreciate how much perseverance you have put in. So let's talk real quick. If you could, tell the listeners a little bit about your new book, and then I would like to ask you a little bit about what's going on in the rest of the country as well.
Okay. Well, the book is titled Sustainable: The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. And it started out to be a 35-page booklet, and I got about one chapter into it. I thought, there's no way this can be. So I expanded it to really go into it. I focused on the book. I focused on the property rights angle of this. The issue of sustainable development, Agenda 21, is massive. It affects every aspect of our lives, everything. How many kids you can have, where you live, what kind of job you can have, your energy use, you know, all this kind of stuff. And people can't wrap their head around it. They start to work on something, and all of a sudden this other thing comes up, and they go, well, which way do I go? So I have focused in the book on property rights, because what I've learned over 30 years working on this is that This is a direct threat on property rights. They cannot implement sustainable development policies without destroying private property. And people keep wanting to say, well, President Trump's going to, you know, take care of this. No, he's not. He can't. He doesn't. There's not enough of him. Congress, well, we see what they are. And I believe that you have to work on it on the local level. And I believe that if you can protect your property rights on the local level, you can preserve freedom as a nation. And just one quick example is a little tiny town of Orange, New Hampshire. They're so small, they don't even have a downtown. I've been there. I spoke to them. And but they began a few years ago just finding that their county commission was doing something really weird, lots of different strange policies coming out. And they knew nothing about Agenda 21, sustainable development. They've researched it. They found it. In a year or so, they replaced the entire county commission, and they passed a resolution that says they can that the county commission cannot apply for a HUD grant without a vote of the people. I mean, that is revolutionary. And this is the kind of thing that we need to have happen around the country. And if you can protect private property rights, begin to stop the use of eminent domain, just willy-nilly, just tearing buildings down because they want to, and protect those kind of things, then we can, I think, begin to turn things around. We can begin to reduce the size, power, reach, cost of government, and but what other issue is there that you go after that would have that impact? And this is private property is the means to eradicating poverty. Some of the greatest victims of all these programs are the people in the inner cities who have their, they have small businesses, they have private property there. The city council decides we're going to tear all that down with eminent domain and build these high-rise, smart growth apartment buildings and all that. Where do those people go? Their businesses are killed. They're replaced by big global corporations. Houses or homes are gone. They're forced into government programs from which there's no escape. And so, this is what's happening. We're looking, one of the things we're talking about in this whole process is a way to help rebuild these neighborhoods financially without government programs. And Ben Carson has said he wants to do this. I'm trying to get with him so we can talk about how we're going to do that. But anyway, all these things are in the book. And talking about how private property eradicates poverty, the lost definition of private of property rights, 10 points to define true property rights, and I go into detail what is sustainable development. I've got a whole chapter on the American Planning Association, a whole chapter on the Kelo decision, and I've got a one little chapter entitled "Who Takes the Walk of Shame." I think you were at my thing in Seattle. You know who I'm talking about. But read the book. You'll find out. But somebody who, an organization that ought to be the number one defender of property rights in this country that has turned their back on it. And so these are all the things. And plus, I go into detail what we can do about it. So the book, you can get it, as again, it's called Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property and Individuals. And the website, you can get it on Amazon, it's at Barnes & Noble, but you can get it directly from us at sustainabledevelopment.com. That's our website.
I am shocked that that domain was still open. I'm just going to tell you.
Well, I've had it for several years and didn't use it. I grabbed it a few years back when it was available. I paid a pretty penny for it. But my whole purpose was, I figured when kids were sitting in school and they're talking about sustainable development, first thing they'll do is Google it, and they would go to sustainabledevelopment.com, and they go there and they find my information. I figured that there's nothing more to drive the sustainabilists nuts than to have my stuff come up.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So let's talk a little bit about things that are happening in the rest of the country. You know, we had most states are done with their legislative sessions. There's still a few that are going through their legislative session. Any victories that you can highlight out there that can encourage some of the folks that are listening, and any trends of the radical leftists that are moving forward that the listeners should know about?
Well, one of the victories, I think it's a big one, is in here in the state of Virginia, where I am. A couple of bills were put up that when somebody's property is taken by eminent domain, or they are hurting farmers, things like that, if they've lost profits, that they've got to be reimbursed for that if the government's going to take that property and hurt their businesses. And I thought that was a major step in the right direction. There were several bills in the Virginia legislature this time that dealt with property rights and, you know, that sort of thing. But that was a big one, that the, you know, they take it by eminent domain, they're going to have to pay for it. And so, you know, I mean, I know the Fifth Amendment says they do, but they haven't been. With the Kelo decision, that was all wiped out. So they're really moving in that direction. But the, you know, with this Agenda 2030 that came up, and there's no difference in Agenda 2030 than Agenda 21, except they're just getting more detail. I believe it's, 17 goals that Agenda 2030 has, all of them based on redistribution of wealth and, you know, taking property. I mean, this is all of this, private property and free enterprise cannot exist under these programs, and they are the targets. And they are getting stronger. I mean, every time we come at them with one thing and say this program is bad, then if they get enough opposition there, they change the name of it. They don't change the program. They are beginning to move quicker, harder. The biggest opposition that we're up against is that when you do have a group of people go down and try to talk to your local officials, they just will not listen at all. Because this is so total, you know, in everything that they're doing, that they and they are surrounded by these NGOs and these planning groups, that they just won't listen to anybody, because they think, well, they're just nutcases, because they've convinced them of that. But you know what, we are seeing more people beginning to stand up. And so, you know, I know that's kind of contradictory what I'm saying, but it's a start. And it's gotten this way because we haven't stood up. And I think if we begin to do more and more of that, then it'll begin to have an effect. Number one is you've got to, first of all, you know, as I point out when I speak, these non-governmental organizations and organizations like the National Governors Association, the Conference of Mayors, all these other organizations for city councilmen and county commissioners, people begin to think that those are official organizations. They're government organizations. And so they have a right to be there and then dictate all this stuff. No, they don't. They are all private 501c3 organizations that have no more legitimacy there than anybody else, except that these elected officials give it to them. You get the right elected officials in office who will not recognize them. You can kick them right out of town, and that's the end of the grant programs. That's the end of all their force to try to put all this stuff together, and that's what we need to concentrate on.
So, you know, there's been a lot of corruption that's been exposed, especially regarding property rights. You know, most notably, obviously, the Bundy case down in Nevada. Yes, indeed, the BLM was doing things wrong. Yes, indeed, they were intentionally targeting property owners. Many of us knew this from the Wayne Hage case, you know, that had happened in the same area of the country. It's one thing to expose the stuff. How do we hold these folks accountable for this? You mentioned kicking, you know, getting the electorate educated enough that they will fire all their county commissioners in one election, or the vast majority of them in one election. But how do we hold the bureaucrats accountable? Because that's really the institutionalization of these agendas.
Yeah, and that's what organizations like ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, does. When they come into a community, they bring in all their training programs, their computer programs, they have conferences, they've got all kind of newsletters, everything. Their purpose is to train the bureaucracy to always think in terms of sustainable programs. And so you're right, that is a major problem. But of course, as you well know, you can pass, you know, all kinds of good legislation, or try to, and these guys will ignore it, or they'll be the ones who fight it. But I believe that if you don't have to replace the entire council, for example, I think you can replace one or two. If they know that you knocked two of them out of office because they you know, because of these issues, that'll get them to question whether they should continue with it or not. I've said several times, victory is having these guys sitting there in a meeting, and the NGOs come in and say, oh, here's the new plan for you. And they sit there and say, are you nuts? Do you know what these people do to me if we try to do this? That's victory. And that's where we've got to be. They've got to fear us. And the problem we've had, Matt, is that when we say rise up, we get 10 people that show up. 10 people did this. We need 100. We need people to understand their rights are being destroyed. And we cannot sit there and do nothing and say, oh, well, golly gee. It will have an effect on them if we stand up to it. And I've got tools on my website how to do this. I go into detail on things we should do there at AmericanPolicy.org. So, you know, you can go there and find out some of these things. But, you know, There is this feeling of hopelessness and feeling of looking down and defeat that permeates people because we haven't seen the victories that we need. But they are there. I'm getting reports from people, a little bit here, a little bit there. We just need more. They're aware of us. And, you know, the American Planning Association has several times reacted to things we've done because our people come in and start complaining about these things or protesting or whatever. When that first started, they immediately organized a boot camp for their planners to train them how to get around us. Don't say these words because it makes these people see red. You know, this kind of thing. And that's a response to us having an impact. And we need to do more. We have to turn out. We've got to stand up. And the thing with the network, as I said, one of the things that I'm really focusing on is trying to get legal challenges going and getting some good people who can do that. We haven't had that. And one of the things I say, talk about make these elected officials feel pain, not just election-wise. I think if we could pass some state legislation that would make it so that if a city council or a county commission or a state legislature do something that has damaged someone's life, taken their property, whatever, and that person sues and wins, that those elected officials who were responsible for that are personally responsible for that lawsuit. Not because right now you file a lawsuit and win. Say, for example, the case of Martha Bonetta here in Virginia, who had her farm nearly shut down by the county doing these things. And she filed a lawsuit, and she has won, and she's moving on. But the county commissioners felt no responsibility for that. The taxpayers paid, not them. But if you make them personally responsible for it, then they're going to sit there and think twice before they do some of this stuff. So
they are, and that's the whole point. They need to be looking over their shoulders instead of making us look over ours. There's no question about it. Well, in the last couple minutes that we have, if you could plug the website and the book one more time.
Sure. The book is Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals, and it is available at sustainabledevelopment.com, and you can order it right there. We'll ship it right out to you. It's also available on Amazon, and it's available on Barnes & Noble and some other places. By the way, it has reached a bestseller position in its category on Amazon, so that's Amazon's paying some attention to it. And so, in our other website, where you get all kinds of information and tools and so forth on this stuff, is AmericanPolicy.org.
Love it. Well, Tom, I really appreciate everything that you're doing. I look forward to seeing you at Red Pill. It's going to be quite a group of folks all in one place at one time. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I've been told last year they had a lot of energy in the room, and they're really looking forward to this year to, you know, building more. So, yeah, I'm excited to be there. We need that energy. We need to get people really involved and ready to fight.
Absolutely. Well, Tom DeWeese, American Policy Center, thanks once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. Appreciate it, my friend.
My pleasure, Matt. Anytime. Thanks.
All right. Keep up the fight.
Okay.
All right. You can go to AmericanPolicy.org. You can check out his book there, Sustainable. And I love the byline, the war on free enterprise, private property, and individuals. He always calls it way ahead of time. He's been kind of years ahead projecting and predicting what is going to happen with the property rights issues. And anyway, it's going to be a good read. And he also will be here at the Red Pill Expo in Spokane, Washington, June 21st through 23rd. And if you haven't figured out about Red Pill, you can visit, just type it into your search engine, DuckDuckGo or Start Page, not Google. Not Google if you value your privacy. And it'll come up, and you can go there and look at all the terrific speakers, Trevor Loudon, Robert Kiyosaki, G. Edward Griffin, Pat Wood, General Vallely, just a bunch of folks. That looks like a Patriot Radio lineup, actually. I love it. I love it. All right. One event that I forgot to mention at the top of the show. So talked about Red Pill coming up June 21st to 23rd. Also got this March for Our Rights Saturday at noon on April 21st. And we still do not know the venue yet. I'll get that as soon as I have that confirmation from the folks that are putting the event together. But April 16th, a new book, A Great State, the latest in the 299 days universe. And you thought 299 days had gone away and was never to come back up again. The latest in the 299 days universe, A Great State, and a great premise, too, to the book. Coming out April 16th, Shelby Gallagher. We'll have her on the show. That is not her real name, but we will have her on the show as soon as the book launches. Again, A Great State on April 16th. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate all of the well wishes. Send me comments and stuff, too, on what guests you want out there. May God bless all of you. May you make this generation the greatest one.